Okay, so I did grow up in Croatia on the Adriatic coast in the town of Vodice. Anyone here been on a vacation in Vodice ever? One, two, three. That's where I grew up, and that's where I met devotees of Krishna. And I started to read Srila Prabhupada's books in 1988. And then later on, I was forced to be a soldier. That was the old system. You had to go and do your civil duty as a soldier for a year. Then after that, I joined an ISKCON ashram in the city of Rijeka. And then I made a few trips to Slovenia. Oh, as a child, I made quite a few trips to Slovenia. As a matter of fact, for at least 10 years in a row, I spent every winter in Slovenia because I have some relatives here in the small, I guess, village, not even a town, of Poljčane, which is somewhere between Celje and Maribor. So also, at that time, I learned Slovenian. And then in 1999, I moved to the States, and basically since then hardly spoke Croatian, definitely not Slovenian. So for tonight's topic, we have a bit of a continuation of the topic we brought up yesterday. Yesterday we celebrated the appearance day of Srivas Thakur, who was a very intimate devotee, friend and associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, who walked the earth about some 500 years ago or so. So tonight I'll tell three quick stories, and these stories illustrate two sides of a problem that constitutes the essence of material conditioning and the opposite of it, liberation from the clutches or slavery to material conditioning. That stuff's entangled. So in the days of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Navadvip was one of the major centers of learning in India. And India was known for its scholastics and its scholars. For example, one of the systems of preventing corruption of Vedic texts was to memorize Vedic texts in varieties of ways. So, for example, the Bhagavad Gita is written in verses. It's written in verses. And so people would not only memorize these verses, but they would memorize them in such a way they would break words, of course, into compounds, syllables. And then they will recite two syllables forward, one backward. Two forward, one backward. It gets very complicated. And like that, there were different systems. So this was the level of scholarship in India in those days. Intellectuals that, that today we would get scared of. And so this is where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And Mahaprabhu quickly, even in his early teenage, became an outstanding scholar. By his teenage, he was the best scholar that anyone ever heard of. So he was a very prestigious figure. And so in one point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started a Sankirtana movement. In other words, with a group of his Vaishnava devotees, they would at night gather in the house of Shiva's Thakur and they would perform Kirtana. They would sing Krishna's names and dance to it. Now, whatever Mahaprabhu did, because he was such a prestigious figure, it was a prestigious event. And so people who thought themselves to be socially elevated, they felt that they also needed to be invited to Mahaprabhu's events. A friend of mine works in Hollywood by distributing books to celebrities. Over the years, we've given hundreds of books to celebrities. I still have photographs in my computer. And if there is an event organized by a celebrity, if one of the celebrities is not invited, then that celebrity feels offended. This is the human psychology. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a celebrity. And yet, it was all in these events where only a few people were invited to. So all these other people who thought themselves to be socially elevated in socially admirable positions were offended by not being invited to these events by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that they're nearly incinerated out of envy. In other words, the body's almost burned up out of envy. They barely survived that. They were so envious. And so, one of these envious people wanted to defame Shiva's Thakur. And Shiva's Thakur was known and professed to be a Vaishnava. Now, even those of you who are familiar with Indian tradition, there are different types of spiritual practices within Vedic culture. For those of you in the back, there are still a few good seats left in the front, so don't be shy. Yeah, right here, if you want. I'm just saying, because that's usually psychology. No one wants to come to the front, so there's always a big backing up in the back. And so certain practices were considered to be elevated, clean, elegant, and so on. And certain practices, even though the people were indulging in, were considered low class. Somewhat dirty and so on. So someone wanted to defame Shiva's Thakur, at whose house these kirtanas were taking place. So they placed paraphernalia at the night while the kirtan was going on. Someone placed some paraphernalia that would regularly be used by people who engage in these kind of low-class religious ceremonies. In other words, this was an attempt to defame Shiva's Thakur. And so the kirtan ended in one point that night, and then in the morning Shiva's Thakur found that. And then instead of hiding it, he called everyone in town, especially the elders of the town. And he pointed out that, look, you see, I'm actually a Durga worshipper, and I engage in these low-class, dirty kind of type of worship, where you use wine and other kind of substances that to some people in Slovenia may be dear to their heart, but among these brahmanas they're considered impure. Simply by touching them, one ought to take shower, let alone ingest such substances. And then of course people knew that Shiva's Thakur was a thoroughly honest person, and they thought that this was someone was just playing some tricks on Shiva's Thakur. And so later on, what happened to the envious person who placed this paraphernalia at Srivastava's door was that he came down with leprosy. His whole body was covered in wounds. And because leprosy is also contagious, highly contagious, in those days, if someone got a leprosy, he had to leave the village. So this person by the name of Gopal Chapal had to leave the village. And he lived far away from people. And needless to say, he was very miserable. Because apparently, not only that it's a very dangerous disease, but it's also very painful because the whole body is covered in wounds and sores and pus and blood are oozing out of these wounds. And so one day, shortly after this event, he saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing by. And he prostrated himself before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and begged for forgiveness. And he said, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're very merciful and kind and you help people. Please help me. Hearing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very angry. And he told him, because you're so envious, not only that I do not wish to help you, but I wish you suffer from millions of lifetimes like this. And then he left. And then I think years must have gone by, because after that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. And then I think he also traveled. I'm not sure whether he first traveled to South India and then returned, but anyways, a long time went by. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to Bengal. And then this person saw him again. And then he prostrated himself again and again begged for mercy. Now this time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a different attitude. And he was very compassionate towards him, and he told him, well, he was compassionate the first time. We'll explain that in a second. It's not that God is sometimes compassionate and sometimes isn't. Depends what he had for breakfast. And then he told him that he had to go back and he apologized to Srivas Thakur and beg for his forgiveness. And then as soon as this person, what used to be a very arrogant, unpleasant person, he went to Srivas Thakur, offered obeisances and begged for forgiveness. And Srivas Thakur was immediately very happy to see this, and he told him that there was nothing to be concerned about, because he took no offense. So apparently first time when this person begged Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for forgiveness, he did not really realize what he did. Neither was he remorseful. He simply wanted a way out of his trouble. He found himself in big trouble and now he just wanted out. Seeing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was angry. After he suffered for a while, sometimes we have to suffer for a while before we connect all the dots. So after he suffered for a while, his apology was much more genuine. And therefore Mahaprabhu thought, now you're good, you're ready. And so he went and apologized to Srivas Thakur. Now, externally, we could say he criticized another person and he was nasty towards another person and therefore God punished him. Whether God punished him or not, this is the nature of criticism. This is the nature of undue malicious criticism that ultimately targets us. Excuse me, targets, provided we're the criticizer. It targets the criticizer, targets the one who criticizes. And then the interesting thing is that Srivas Thakur, even though being criticized, he it did not dwell, it did not let his mind dwell on it. And the first time he met this person, when this person came to apologize, immediately accepted the apology. Did not take pleasure in revenge. And we'll come back to this. Why is this important? Okay, then I'll skip. So then two stories instead of three. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, we find a verse that repeats in the Srimad Bhagavatam five times. Now, Srimad Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadra Samrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syat Ratim Kvachet. That this Bhagavat Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is considered to be the essence of all of the Vedic texts. Actually, the Vedanta is the summary of all of the Vedas, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedanta. So basically, Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the essence of all of the Vedas. And in this book, we find this verse, which is repeated five times. Does anyone know this verse? Perhaps just the other verses are repeated maybe like three times, but this one's repeated five times. That's a very good verse, but it's not that one. Yeah. I knew you would know. This verse states, says that for one who's meditating on sense gratification or the objects of senses, enjoying the objects of the senses, for one who continues to meditate on sense objects, the material existence, material life continues just like the effects of a bad dream continue for the person who did not wake up. And this is repeated five times in different parts of the Bhagavatam. So whoever continues to meditate on sensual gratification or the objects of sensual pleasure, for such a person, the material existence continues just like the effects of a bad dream do not go away for the person who's still asleep. So in the dream, all kinds of things might be happening. Srila Prabhupada says, you might be dreaming that the tiger is feasting on your legs, chewing on your legs. And all you need to do is wake up to see that there is no tiger. But if you do not wake up, you continue to sleep, then the tiger is there and your legs are not. It is very, very real. Even though it isn't, you just need to wake up. So this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam ends with this verse. And then to illustrate how this principle works, next chapter begins, and this chapter tells a story. Tells a story of a brahmana from Avanti region. Avanti is the name of the region. And this person was apparently very wealthy. And at the same time, he was a miser. A very unpleasant combination. A wealthy person and a miser. Probably that's how he got wealthy, right? Being a miser. It was such a miser that he would not even spend for his own benefit or needs. To the point that even his family members were annoyed by him. It was so stingy. How do you translate that? Stingy. Shkart. Okay. But in one point his life became, I guess, painful enough to where he decided to make a change. And so he completely abandoned materialistic life to the point that he became something like a monk. He renounced the world and everything and just wandered off into the forest. He had no possessions. All that he possessed was the clothes that he wore. And he had a staff, a stick, that symbolized a person in the renounced order of life. And then apparently some people knew him from before. And they just couldn't believe that this person has become a renunciate. And so people used to do intense things to him. Things such as, for example, it's stated that when he would sit down to pray on his prayer beads, people would come and take his beads away. And then they would show the beads. And then when he would try to reach them, they would pull them back. Sometimes they would take away his staff, his danda, his stick. Sometimes it's stated that they even spat on his head. Sometimes he would, as a renunciate in those days in India traditionally, he would go around and beg for food. Then whatever little food he would procure by begging, when he was about to eat it, people would come and steal it from him. Throw it away, give it to the dogs, things like that. At other times, they even tied him up like a dog. And kept him tied like that. And because he had taken the vow of silence, sometimes people would come and try to induce him to say something. And when he would not say anything, they would take his stick. And like what kids, and I hope no kids here do that. Kids, when they go into zoo, then they want to see animal do something, move, or make a sound so that they provoke the animal. So they would do like that to him. They would take his stick and then they would poke him with the stick or hit him with the stick so he would make a sound. Sometimes they would even beat him. So very extreme. Very extreme. But he wouldn't react. And then in one point, he composed a song, because that song is printed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who here is a proud owner or a humble owner of a Srimad Bhagavatam set? Okay. You're not? What is it?
Through internet.
All right, you got out of it. it's one of those books you have to have. Srimad Bhagavatam. And so he composed this song. And in this song, he himself is questioning. So who's to blame here? Who's causing all this? Who's causing me all this trouble? Is it the people? Is it the karma? Is it the demigods? Is it God? I mean, who's doing all this stuff to me? And he goes one by one, says, no, it's not my body. It's not the other people. It's not the demigods. Can't blame God. So who's the perpetrator here? You read it. You read this section of the Bhagavatam? You figured it out. It is the mind. And he said, the guilty fellow is the mind. Why the mind? Because the mind, he says that the mind actuates the three modes of the material nature. In other words, there are three qualities, there are like three ropes in this world that bind the conditions, that bind the soul to this world. But these three qualities, or these three ropes, they're actuated, they're initiated, they're put to work by the mind. They're there, they're doing their thing, but the mind, our mind, makes the bondage by these three modes possible. You might have noticed how life is, that there are different stimuli in the world, in our lives. We encounter many situations which are stimulating us. We feel like they're urging us to do or say and act, say something or act in a particular way. But in one point, unless we agree to do that, that does not take place. So the three modes, these three qualities, characteristics, aspects of the illusory material life, they're sometimes compared to three monkeys. And they jump around and do their stuff. But unless we say yes, they have no influence on us. Unless we agree, they have no influence on us. So therefore this Brahmana concluded that it is my mind who's the guilty party here. Because I meditate on these three qualities and I let them do it. Now in the beginning of this chapter it is stated that a sharp arrow of a hunter, when piercing the heart, does not hurt as much as the sharp words of foolish people. In other words, the harsh language that foolish people may use to hurt us hurt much more than the arrow that might pierce the heart. But for one who allows one's mind to focus on those foolish words, offensive and foolish words, such a person actuates the modes of material existence. And thus material illusion becomes reality. And to help us understand this mechanism, and to help us and to encourage us, Bhagavatam gives this rather extreme story. I mean, who here was tied like a dog or beaten with a stick? Well, my mom beat me a few times. Gently. So this is rather an extreme story. Hardly any one of us will ever find ourselves in this kind of extreme situation. But the point is that If we are exposed to criticism, we have this tendency to focus on that criticism, to accept it, feel hurt, and react to it. And in this way, material illusion becomes reality. In the first story, that of Srivas Thakur, we learn the consequences that are in store for a criticizer. And in the second story, we learn how to deal with the situation in which we are the object of criticism. In either case, if we don't pass the test, we're asleep. In other words, materialistic existence becomes very real, becomes reality. There's a famous verse that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uttered, Trinarapi Sunichena Taro Rivasahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. That one should be tolerant like a tree, humble like a blade of grass, and that in this state of mind, one can always chant the name of Krishna. But only seldom, if ever, do we think that to be tolerant like a tree means to tolerate the dualities of material existence. Iccha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoha sarge yanti parantapa. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that this is the illusion that covers all of the conditioned souls in the material existence. And what is this illusion? This is the illusion of iccha and dvesha, of attraction to sense gratification and repulsion by that which doesn't feel pleasant. That's why in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that he should become tolerant. And what should he tolerate? Matra sparsha stukantya shitushna sukadukada agama apaina anitya. One should tolerate material pleasure and material pain. And tolerate, in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada says, means to ignore. Because the business, the purpose of material pleasure and material pain is same, which is to distract us from that which is important. Once I heard a story of a monk who was standing waiting for a bus. And then a person would jump out of a bush and whack him up. And then would return to the bush. And repeated this few times. And so a person that was also waiting for the bus asked the monk, why don't you do something about it? And the monk said, it's not my problem. In other words, the guy in the bush has an issue. He's got some problem. I don't know what his problem is. He refused to take ownership of the problem. It was good. But it is an essential instruction. Time and time again, in Krishna consciousness, we learn that we ought to keep appropriate focus, which is Krishna. And losing Krishna out of focus, material existence is initiated. And therefore, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes that the preliminary qualification for transcendence, in other words, spiritual existence, is tolerance of duality. And therefore that verse, Trinad Api Sunichana, is rather very important. That one learns to ignore material existence. Now our tendency is to take pleasure in criticizing. And our tendency is to passionately respond to criticism. And when I say criticism, I don't speak of morally right, correct, constructive criticism. I speak of malicious, unwarranted, unjust criticism. And I was told, even though I myself also use internet a lot, but internet in modern times has made communication very easy. Who here uses a mobile device that can go on the internet? I mean, I'm raising my hand because I also use it. You guys are outdated. You're too old, Prabhu. You're saved from this trouble. And in many ways, it's a great tool. It's a wonderful tool. I remember as a teenager, this was pre-internet days. Unimaginable as it may seem nowadays, but if you wanted to find something out, you had to go to a library and dig up a book and read sometimes multiple books before you would find the little piece of information you needed. Sometimes you didn't even know what library to go to. So in many ways, internet is just, it's a wonderful tool. But it's, like everything else that's powerful, it's also very dangerous. So if we use our communication tools to allow ourselves to be absorbed in that which is not Krishna, and specifically in these powerful forms of criticism, namely being a criticizer or being criticized, we just drift off away from the path of transcendence. And life is so short. You never know how dirty a place is until you start cleaning. So those who have truly tried to become God conscious, seriously God conscious, they know that this requires time and effort. And to waste time on anything else is just extremely unfortunate. So general rule here is to not allow the mind to actuate the modes of material nature. By not allowing ourselves to get into cheap criticism of other people. And to resist the urge to respond to ignorant criticism. If we could just remember this one thing, that material pain and material pleasure have the same function. And that's to steal our attention. The best is to use time in company of serious spiritual Krishna conscious practitioners, where one can avail oneself of authentic, true and deep information about Krishna consciousness, life in general, and Krishna conscious practices. Because one interesting aspect of illusion is that when one is in illusion, one does not think he is in illusion. So what's the future of such a person unless that person has a company of genuine and serious spiritual practitioners? So I shall stop here. And if there are any questions or comments, is that okay? Yes, we have a question there. And then number two over here. Yes.
Yes, Hare Krishna. I would just like to ask, somebody could get the impression that basically we are promoting pacifism, which of course on the other hand is also actually our philosophy. For example, when somebody criticizes you, a preacher has to react sometimes because it's good for the benefit of other people, because otherwise he can lose authority. And then how can you preach without any authority in your words? Also, for example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even Sannyasa, people would take him seriously. On the other hand, also Arjuna, he was told not to talk, not to turn the other cheek.
So, who's right, Bible or the Bhagavad Gita? That's it? Okay. Yeah, that's why I mentioned that there are two types of criticism. There's the ignorant, simply malicious criticism, and then there's constructive criticism. So obviously we differentiate between the two. And we as educators, we do, it is our duty to uphold the truth and speak the truth. And even sometimes correct people. But that also has to be done within the domain of our influence. If it's outside of the domain of our influence, we're just wasting our time. So, therefore, there's also Vaishnava etiquette, which I heard you have courses on here. So we don't have to elaborate much about that. But still, you're mostly all Vaishnavas here as far as I can tell. And Vaishnavas, in my experience, 30 or so years associating with Vaishnavas, they're very pleasant people. Very pleasant, very humble, very hospitable. Until you start discussing politics. then they all turn into lions. And because that is the nature of politics. And when I say politics, I use it in a Greek, the way Greeks used it. Politics as that which concerns public, the people. So in other words, when there are certain concerns that we share, then we naturally come to discuss those. And this is a very passionate situation. Very passionate situation, which means one can easily fall prey to the duality of illusion. So especially those who are not awfully too transcendental, I would advise them to just keep quiet. Otherwise they will most likely get sucked into that very intense situation and get dragged away into some dark places. That's a question? Okay, you're number three though. We have question two here. Is that okay?
You're welcome.
Does that understand one is not supposed to tolerate another Vaishnava being criticized? How about the situation where you're exposed to ignorant criticism of another Vaishnava, but it's not very likely that you can influence this person to change its mind? You can give them opportunity to criticize more. Is it fine that you just keep quiet and say,
yeah, that requires a little life wisdom, at least speaking from my experience, because I remember when we used to do these summer tours, we would go to public places during summertime and chant Hare Krishna for many hours. There'd be hundreds of people around, and we would stop, and then people would not let us stop. It was very blissful. And then eventually around midnight we would just stop. But people would still be around asking so many questions. And then every once in a while there would be an antagonist. And then we would always find ourselves in this situation. Okay, how do we react right now? Because this person is just now polluting everyone's minds and is giving a very twisted, sick picture of spirituality in general and Krishna consciousness in particular. And sometimes we would, with logic, reason and arguments, we would quiet the person. But very often these people, they don't have intellectual issues, they have rather emotional issues. So as soon as you enter this relationship that they're asking you to enter, then everything just goes very wrong. It requires some expertise. Usually when people see that if you remain cool-headed, that they tend to be won by that, not so much by the arguments. But if person simply having emotional issues, not reasonable, and there's no audience, I just try to be kind to the person, because obviously logic reason doesn't work, so why use it? And then I go away. There's a lot of religious fanatics were like that. And this is especially in some traditions more than in others, so much so that in America people have printed a bumper sticker that says, "Oh God, please save me from your followers." Is that okay? Okay, number three.
Yeah, my question is sometimes
So that's a classical argument that limits, unjustly limits the options. Basically, if it's not A, it must be B. But there are other options too. First of all, if we speak from the point of view of a Vaishnava in Slovenia, and there are not that many Vaishnavas in Slovenia, relatively speaking, we should therefore naturally concern ourselves first with people with whom we can actually have some kind of a communication. Why waste time with people with whom we can make no progress? If you really have to waste your time with deeply damaged people, then we can talk about that. Because also in the Bhagavatam, it is stated that Madhyama Adhikari is one who Ishvare Tadadineshu Balisheshu Dvishatsucha Prema Maitri Kripa Upeksha Yakkarati Samadhyamaha. That prema, love, is given to God. Friendship is given to devotees. Mercy, kindness, is given to innocent. And antagonists, you ignore. Okay, shall we end here? There's one more question. Well, I'm sorry, I can barely hear your question. It's... Liberated state means that your activities are by nature pure and liberated. If your activities are not pure and liberated, then, excuse me, let me rephrase this. If someone's activities are not pure and liberated, that person is not on a liberated platform, and that person is bound to the material world by the reactions of that person's work. And Ichha and Vesha, the material pleasure and pain, they tend to pull one very powerfully to the material world. Okay, any burning questions or comments? Okay, there's a burning one.
What's the goal of life?
What is the goal of life? Prabhupada, that's a good question. That's the best question. A trivial question is, where are you from? Just curious.
I'm from India.
Yeah, I can tell. Where from?
What?
Where from?
New Delhi.
New Delhi, okay. You're a city boy. You grew up in Delhi?
Yes.
Huh. When Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, and he was asked this question a number of times, he said different things. The most vague answer Prabhupada gave was to be happy. More precise is to learn to love God. Of course, Prabhupada often translated word love as service, because love without service is not love. It's like fire without heat. You may call it fire, but it isn't. That is the natural constitutional position of the living entity. Is that okay? Okay, I think we can bring this to a close now. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.